YouTube. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of
Democracy Now!
Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
You're not going to take any responsibility for the indentured servitude and exploitation of children that is happening on your watch. A moment ago, you were crowing about the fact that you treated children so well, and yet we find tens of thousands of children who are forced to work as slaves because of your policies, and you turn around and blame a prior administration.
The Biden administration is facing growing criticism from Republican lawmakers as well as immigrant rights groups for its failure to prevent a surge of migrant children as young as 12 working in factories across the United States. We'll speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times journalist Hannah Dreyer, who's revealed at least five Health and Human Services staff members were pushed out by the Biden administration after raising concerns about child safety. Then we look at a rare victory in the immigrant rights movement, as a judge has just ruled longtime organizer Jean Montreville will no longer be at risk of deportation to Haiti, ending a decades-long saga. Plus, we look at the growing controversy around Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas after ProPublica revealed Thomas had failed to disclose his deep ties to right-wing billionaire Harlan Crow. Thomas vacationed on Crow's private yacht and jet and even sold property to Crow without disclosing it.
Gifts like this to Supreme Court justices don't just corrode the integrity of the Supreme Court. They make the legal playing field more unfair. Billionaires can afford to give justices luxury vacations. Students with student loan debt, welfare recipients, and poor people don't have that luxury, and they can't afford to buy the justices' affections.
We'll get the latest and look at what happened in 1969 when another Supreme Court justice, Abe Fortas, was forced to quit for behavior considered less egregious than Thomas's. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Fox News has agreed to pay $787.5 million to Dominion Voting Systems in the largest media defamation settlement in history. The 11th-hour deal was finalized just hours after a Delaware jury was sworn in and as opening statements were expected to begin. Dominion had sought $1.6 billion in damages from Fox for promoting lies about its voting machines being rigged against Trump in the 2020 election. Dominion CEO John Poulos called the settlement historic.
Throughout this process, we have sought accountability and believe the evidence brought to light through this case underscores the consequences of spreading lies. Truthful reporting in the media is essential to our democracy.
Fox News is not required to apologize or admit they knowingly lied to their viewers as part of the settlement. It also means the network's biggest stars and chair of Fox Corporation, Rupert Murdoch, will not have to take the stand. Evidence unveiled during the discovery process revealed hosts Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson knew the election fraud claims were false. Fox still faces other lawsuits over its pro-Trump lies, including a $2.7 billion defamation suit from another election technology company, Smartmatic. Dominion has also sued other news networks and high-profile Trump associates, including Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. A 24-hour ceasefire in Sudan has fallen apart as military airstrikes rained down on Khartoum's main international airport on the fifth day of fighting today, while paramilitaries shot at the Sudanese army jets in response. At least 185 people have died so far, as the UN warns the conflict has created a humanitarian catastrophe. The civilian population has been increasingly cut off from essentials, including power, food and health care. This is a Sudanese activist and humanitarian worker who fled the capital, Khartoum.
No one can buy their daily needs. Military clashes continue during the night, so it is not recommended to go out to buy your needs. It is dark, power is off, so it is dangerous because the fighting parties cannot figure out if you are a civilian or a militant. I believe this Ramadan is like hell for people in Sudan.
Aid workers continue to face violent attacks with reports of sexual assaults. A Doctors Without Borders compound in Nayala, the capital of South Darfur, was raided by armed men. Residents describe the terror and chaos of war as they grapple with dwindling supplies.
At one point, you'll find yourself praying a lot to really be, saved and throughout this and the country to be saved throughout this. And then at one time and other times, you're too lost in what's happening around you. Are you going to be okay? Are your friends going to be okay? Your family, your neighbors, even the people you don't really know, but you see around in the streets, you know?
President Biden signed an executive order Tuesday directing almost all federal agencies to implement new measures to make child care and elder care more affordable and accessible. The order is intended to improve care without congressionally approved legislation or extra funding after Biden failed to deliver on his pledge of universal pre-K and fully covering child care for low-income families. Biden blamed Republicans for continuing to push cuts for social programs, including as part of the ongoing dispute over the debt ceiling. Senate Republicans blocked Democrats from temporarily replacing Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's recovering from shingles on the Judiciary Committee. The prolonged absence of the 89-year-old Feinstein, who is retiring at the end of her current term, has stalled the confirmation of Biden's judicial nominees and prompted some members of her party to call for her resignation. In Tunisia, police arrested opposition leader Rachid Hanouchi and raided his Ennahda party's headquarters in the latest crackdown on critics of President Kais Saied. Saied has been accused of carrying out a legislative coup after he dismissed the government, declared rule by decree, and vowed to rewrite Tunisia's constitution in 2021. This is Hanouchi speaking just 2 days before he was detained.
Tunisia without another party and without political Islam, without the left or any of the components, is a civil war project. This is a crime, in fact. And therefore, those who welcome this coup cannot be Democrats.
In other news from Tunisia, clashes broke out between mourning protesters and police at the funeral of professional soccer player Nizar Asawi, who died last week after setting himself on fire in what's been described as a protest against the police state. Prior to his death, Asawi decried the police for accusing him of terrorism after a dispute with a fruit vendor over the price of bananas. In Syria, Saudi Arabia's foreign minister met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus in the first high-level Saudi visit to Syria since the start of the civil war in 2011. This comes as Syria's Arab neighbors are discussing its possible return to the 22-member Arab League and other ways of bringing the war-torn nation out of isolation. Meanwhile, Qatar and the United Arab Emirates are moving forward on restoring their country's ties with plans to reopen embassies more than 2 years after the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain and Egypt lifted a blockade on Qatar. Indonesia's military chief denied claims by the West Papua National Liberation Army that it killed a dozen Indonesian soldiers this weekend during a failed Kopassus operation to rescue a New Zealand pilot taken hostage by the pro-independence fighters. Indonesia says only one soldier was killed while four others were missing. The attack has raised fears of a massive retaliation by Indonesian forces in West Papua, where protests for independence have been met by bloody repression by the Indonesian army. The European Parliament approved major reforms to strengthen and accelerate the EU's climate goals. This includes a plan to charge polluters on Europe's carbon market for all of their emissions and add shipping emissions to the market. The change is expected to cut emissions by 62% from 2005 levels by 2030. The EU would also start levying high carbon imports. This is European Parliament President Roberta Metsola.
These laws will put a price on the carbon we produce, and it means that the most polluting industries will have to increase their emission reduction targets. It will also put a price for non-EU producers, providing a level playing field so that we will not leave our industry at a disadvantage vis-a-vis their external competitors.
Germany shut down its last three nuclear reactors Saturday after decades of debate and organizing by anti-nuclear activists. This is Jürgen Tritten, a lawmaker from the Green Party.
Yeah.
The introduction of this technology, the introduction, was a historical mistake, and today we remedy this mistake.
The long-anticipated move came as only a partial victory for environmental activists as Europe's largest economy has ramped up its coal production to make up for the loss of nuclear power and the energy crisis spurred by the Ukraine war. Anti-nuclear activists also noted there's still no definite plan for storing all the highly toxic nuclear waste from Germany's decommissioned plants, which must be securely stored underground for 1 million years. Here in New York, Holtec International, the owner of the decommissioned Indian Point nuclear facility, said it's paused plans to dump 1 million gallons of radioactive water into the Hudson River. The plan provoked community outrage from residents and environmentalists. Tritium, a byproduct of nuclear fission, cannot be filtered out of water and has been linked to cancer. And in more news from New York, environmental groups are blasting Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul over her nomination of Caitlin Halligan to the New York State Court of Appeals, the state's highest court. Halligan represented Chevron as it pursued racketeering charges against the human rights lawyer Steven Donziger, who successfully sued Chevron on behalf of Ecuadorian Amazonian indigenous people for massively polluting their ancestral land with oil. In a statement, the grassroots group Public Power New York said, quote, "It's time for Hochul to pick a side. Does she stand with corporate polluters or with environmental justice communities here in New York and across the world?" they asked. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The New York Times is reporting the Biden administration's repeatedly ignored or missed warnings about a surge of migrant children as young as 12 working in factories across the United States. The Times reports, quote, "At least five Health and Human Services staff members filed complaints and said they were pushed out after raising concerns about child safety," unquote. One of the HHS staffers told the New York Times, quote, "I feel like short of protesting in the streets, I did everything I could to warn them. They just didn't want to hear it," she said. In February, the Times published a blockbuster report about child labor based on accounts by over 100 unaccompanied migrant children, mostly from Central America, who described grueling and often dangerous working conditions, including having to use heavy machinery, being subjected to long hours and late-night shifts at facilities that manufacture products from major brands and retailers like Hearthside Food Solutions, the makers of Cheerios, Fruit of the Loom, Whole Foods, Target, Walmart, J. Crew, Frito-Lay, and Ben & Jerry's. Others were forced to work as cleaning staff at hotels, at slaughterhouses, construction sites, car factories owned by General Motors and Ford, in serious violation of child labor laws. On Tuesday, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was grilled about the Biden administration's response to forced child labor. This is Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri.
"You're not going to take any responsibility for the indentured servitude and exploitation of children that is happening on your watch. A moment ago, you were crowing about the fact that you treated children so well, and yet we find tens of thousands of children who are forced to work as slaves because of your policies, and you turn around and blame a prior administration. Mr. Secretary, this is par for the course for you. You do it every time you appear before this committee. You do it every time you appear before Congress. I, for one, am sick and tired of it, and thousands of children are in physical danger. Danger because of what you are doing. You should have resigned long ago. And if you cannot change course, you should be removed from office." Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're joined now by Hannah Dreier, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at The New York Times. Her new investigation is headlined, "As Migrant Children Were Put to Work, U.S. Ignored Warnings." Dreier's earlier piece was headlined, "Alone and Exploited, Migrant Children Work Brutal Jobs Across the U.S." Hannah Dreier, welcome back to Democracy Now! We had you on for your first blockbuster expose showing children as young as 12 working across the United States. Now you're reporting that the Biden administration knew about this, not only knew about this and didn't do anything, they actually did do something. They pushed out those within the administration who were raising alarms. Can you talk about what you found?
It's great to be with you, Amy. And yeah, just as you say, people were punished for bringing this to the attention of their supervisors. People say that they were fired, they were demoted. I spent a year talking to children who came to this country and are working in the most exploitative conditions in factories and slaughterhouses. I found these children in every single state in this country. And so after that story came out, I began asking, how could it have been that the Biden administration didn't know about this? And what I found was that actually they were given evidence, they were given warnings. There was sign after sign that this was happening for 2 years. And the administration really didn't spring into action until just last month.
And Hannah, I was particularly struck by the information about Susan Rice, the White House head of domestic policy, and her reaction to the reports that there were problems in terms of how these children were being treated. Could you talk about that? Because Susan Rice has been a person who's been in every Democratic administration over the last 30 years, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and now Joe Biden.
Right. Susan Rice is a hugely important figure, and she is Biden's top point person on immigration. So it's not, you know, some junior staffer at the White House who maybe got a warning one time and it didn't get, you know, channeled in the appropriate way. What I found was that Susan Rice's team was told about this again and again. And the kind of evidence we're talking about are clusters of children found to be working in different parts of the country repeatedly in these very industrial jobs. So these are children making car parts. These are children using caustic chemicals and acids to scrub a chicken plant. And those messages got to Susan Rice's level. Memos airing concerns about these issues got to Susan Rice's level. Her team was told, going back to, you know, the summer of 2021, that people were very worried about this. And what the White House has basically said is, well, maybe we saw these signs, but we didn't put it all together. What their response has been is sort of a lack of curiosity or a lack of conscientious thinking to realize that if we're seeing kids in all these different places who are doing these jobs, maybe there is a larger trend here. Maybe there's thousands of these kids out there.
Well, they did put it together sufficiently to force out five Health and Human Service staff members. Could you talk about those, some of those staff members and the alarms that they raised?
So these are the people who are running the unaccompanied minor program for Health and Human Services. One of the women who I spoke with, Jalen Swalog, she helped build this program. She started working for the government in 2010, right when we first started to see these waves of children coming over. And she was in charge of this program for years and years. She was the highest official running the program when Biden took over. And what she says is she raised alarms. We've seen her emails where she's saying something catastrophic is going to happen. I'm pleading with somebody to pay attention. When her emails went unanswered, she went to Congress and she talked to Congress staffers and said, again, I'm really worried about what's happening here. These children are in danger. And she was pushed out. She was one of five people who I spoke to who filed complaints, who showed me their emails where they're saying, you know, something really wrong is happening here. And they say that instead of being listened to, they were demoted and people just did not want to hear these warnings.
I wanted to turn to the White House Press Secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, who was speaking on Tuesday.
I want to state that ORR is dedicated. This administration moves swiftly to crack down on violators and are more rigorously vet more vigorously vet sponsors of unaccompanied minors, DOL and HHS, launching a new task force to heighten cooperation and better share information. We also called on Congress to provide the resources this administration has long requested to help us crack down on companies that exploit children for labor. The actions we've taken since February make clear that we will continue to investigate and hold companies accountable, but we also need Congress to provide the resources we need to enforce. And we've been very clear. Again, DOL, HHS have taken actions, but we need Congress to also give DOL and HHS the resources that they need to broaden these actions that they've put forward.
So that's the White House response. If you could respond to that and particularly talk about who's responsible for what. I mean, we saw this dramatic confrontation between Senator Hawley and Alejandro Mayorkas, who's head of Homeland Security. Talk about what Homeland Security is responsible for. He was particularly angry that Mayorkas was blaming the Trump administration for separating children. Homeland Security is responsible for, what HHS is responsible for. And tell us more about these whistleblowers who made clear time and again what was happening. And were not just not listened to, as was just pointed out, but were pushed out one after another after another.
So in fairness to the Biden administration, they have taken rapid action after our first story came out a month ago. And the Department of Labor is really ramping up the way that they're going to try to go after these companies that exploit migrant children. And Health and Human Services has also taken some steps. What's been just so shocking to me is that these steps were not taken earlier. And one dynamic that people often point out is that a lot of this came in response to the crisis at the border, where children were coming in record numbers right when Biden took office. And a lot of them were sort of languishing in Customs and Border Protection jails because there wasn't enough room in the shelter system to take them in. And so there was wall-to-wall coverage of children sleeping on the floor, children under those tin blankets. And the Biden administration was really getting slammed on, why are these kids languishing in jails? I thought you were going to take care of them. And so there was all this pressure in the administration to move those kids out quickly because it was so visible when they were ending up sleeping on the floor, or sleeping in these terrible conditions. And what happened after that with all these kids working was much less visible. You know, nobody's going to go and have a big newsreel about children who are working in the poultry plant because you can't get in there. And so it was sort of a trade-off, as it's been explained to me, between this very visible crisis where kids weren't moving out of the shelters quickly enough and this hidden crisis where kids are now working these terrible jobs and often sort of languishing in debt bondage. And that's just part of this dynamic that sort of comes up again and again. The agencies that are responsible here are really Department of Labor and Health and Human Services. I know Mayorkas has been getting questioned about this, I think sort of as a proxy for the Biden administration. But the agency that is in charge of migrant children is Health and Human Services. It's not like the regular immigration system. Children go to this different agency that's supposed to be a child welfare agency, and it's Health and Human Services that's then responsible for releasing them to sponsors and protecting them from trafficking and exploitation.
And yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, the role of Health and Human Services, because obviously we can understand the pressure that the Biden administration was under to get children out of the detention facilities. But then the responsibility had to fall on the agency that kept seeing one or another individual repeatedly offering to sponsor children to monitor and check up what these sponsors were actually doing with the children. Wouldn't that fall largely on Health and Human Services?
Yes, that is Health and Human Services. And these staffers who had to try to connect children with sponsors and move them out of shelters tell me that to them, this often felt worse than even during, you know, child separation under Trump. The people who work in this agency, they're mostly Democrats. They mostly are in this work because they really believe that migrant children are important and want to watch out for them. And they say that they felt this huge pressure to just get kids out of the shelter, to send them to whoever, to send them to people who had already sponsored multiple children. I spoke with one of these workers in Texas who said that just in 2 weeks doing this job for Health and Human Services, she found 6 cases where children were being sent to people who said that they were intending to put the children to work or who had already sponsored other kids who were not their relatives. She flagged the case of one 14-year-old who was being sent to a non-relative. And she said, I'm really worried about this kid. I think this kid is being trafficked. I think this kid is going to have to pay off some kind of debt. And as far as we can tell, nothing ever happened. I caught up with that kid 2 years later, and sure enough, he was put to work. He had to drop out of middle school. He had to pay his own rent. He had to pay off thousands of dollars in debt, and he was just completely on his own, even though his case had been flagged by a whistleblower.
Finally, Hannah, we just have 30 seconds. What were you were most shocked by in reporting the second expose?
I just could not believe that this wasn't flagged earlier. I mean, with something this widespread, thousands and thousands of children, you want to believe that people at the highest level of government are going to pay attention when they're shown evidence of the worst kind of child labor exploitation.
Hannah Dreier, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at The New York Times, will link to your new investigation as migrant children were put to work, U.S. ignored warnings, and your previous piece, Alone and Exploited, Migrant Children Work Brutal Jobs Across the U.S. Coming up, a rare victory in the immigrant rights movement. As a judge rules, longtime organizer Jean Montreville will no longer be at risk of deportation to Haiti, ending a decades-long saga. Stay with us. Back in 30 seconds. Les Amazones by Thomas Bangalter. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. In a Democracy Now! Broadcast exclusive, we turn now to a rare victory in immigration court that unfolded here in New York yesterday, in a case we have followed for more than a decade. On Tuesday, an immigration judge ruled that Jean Montreville, a Haitian immigrant, longtime activist, will no longer face deportation after he'd been targeted for his activism for years by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Under President Trump, Jean was deported to Haiti in 2018. He was given a second chance in 2021 when Virginia Governor Ralph Northam granted him a pardon for 2 drug convictions that were 30 years old, which ICE had used as a pretext to deport him. This gave Jean the opportunity to seek to reopen his case and regain his legal immigration status. In a rare move, he was allowed to return to the United States on a 90-day special parole, but the threat of deportation continued to hang over his head until yesterday, when the decades-long saga came to a close. In a courtroom packed with supporters, the judge told Jean, I want you to know I see the good in you, too. For more, Jean Montreville joins us himself, alongside Alina Das, part of his legal team and co-director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at NYU School of Law. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Jean, we spoke to you in Port-au-Prince when you were deported to Haiti. Now, as you sit in a New York studio, can you describe what this victory feels like, what it meant to you yesterday, and what actually happened in that courtroom?
Amy, good morning. Thank you for having us again. And it was huge for me. It was amazing. I was so happy. The feeling of knowing that I no longer face deportation and now I have an opportunity to stay here with my children. This case has always been me staying with my kids. I love my kids. My kids love me. I think yesterday also the judge sent a message to the government. You can't silence someone just because they're speaking against the government. And I'm so happy. We were so happy yesterday. And my team at NYU, they did excellent jobs. My kids were there. The people from my church, Justin Memorial Church, all my supporters, we were so happy. I mean, unbelievable feeling.
And Jim, could you talk about how important it was for the people to be there in the courtroom to show your support, to demonstrate that to the judge, how this is part of the strategy of groups like Families for Freedom and your work in the past with the New Sanctuary Coalition?
Yes, I mean, it was extremely important. The judge even mentioned that in his